This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Tonight, a missing teen girl, Brooke Farthing, seemingly vanishes into thin air after a high school grad party. Where is Brooke? Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
Eighteen-year-old Brooke Farthing goes missing from Berea, Kentucky, after a series of suspicious events at a friend's residence. In the hours before her disappearance, Brooke texts and calls an ex-boyfriend, repeatedly saying she feels unsafe and asking for a ride, before she is never heard from again.
She went to a birthday party. She left from family. Everything was golden, 100% perfect. Smiling face, giggling, laughing, full of life. And in less than 24 hours, we have nothing. Sometimes you don't get all the answers, and I may have to live my whole life with never seeing this child again. So I pray for an end for it. Please have mercy on us. Let us know where she's at.
Dear Lord in heaven, that is Brooke's mom, Shelby Tillery, speaking to our friends at ID. Let me understand this. Straight out to Alexis Terezchuk joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Alexis, Brooke is a teen girl. She's celebrating graduation. She goes to her grandpa's birthday party, as mom, Shelby, was telling us, then heads out to a grad party. There she is. Then, after that, she's never seen alive again. She seemingly just vanishes into thin air. What do we know about what happened that evening, Alexis?
So, after their grandfather's birthday, Brooke, her sister Paige, one of their cousins, went to a party. Brooke had just graduated from high school. It's a house party. All the teens are together. They're celebrating. They're celebrating finishing school, starting summer. They're having a great time. They all are partying together. Then Brooke goes with her really good friend. She's at her house. There's a party there. The friend decides that she wants to leave with someone else. So Brooke is there without her sister and without her cousin. They have left. They've gone to go to another party. And Brooke is sort of stuck at this house without her sister, without her cousin, and then without her friend.
Okay, hold on just a second, Alexis Terezchuk. Let me understand the timeline. So she goes to the grandpa's birthday party. That's what Miss Shelby was talking about. She went to the grandpa's birthday party. Then there are, which I've learned with children just graduating, there are multiple grad parties going on. This one and her friends are having a grad party, and that one and her friends are having a grad party. They're get-togethers at people's homes. So she heads to one of those grad parties. Do I have it right so far?
Yes, she does. And she's with her sister. She's with her cousin. In fact, she and her sister had just spent the day getting their driver's licenses. They finally took the test. However, in sort of a cute story, Brooke passed, but her sister Paige did not pass. She did not get her license that day. So Brooke was sort of gloating over her sister.
What I don't understand is how her cell phone is missing, but her shoes are found.
Her and her phone is what is missing. It wasn't there. If she left to go anywhere, she went without her shoes because her shoes were still on the front porch. Her phone rang for two to three days, I want to say, after they try to pinpoint the location of it. And you get like a 3-mile radius around the Blue Lick cell tower. Is what they keep telling us to, if we wanted to search, that we could search in that radius.
Well, that's a fine kettle of fish when the family's told, hey, if you want to go search, there's a vast area, go have at it. That is from our friends at The Vanished Podcast. Brian Fitzgibbons is joining us, Director of Operations, USPA Nationwide Security. He leads a team of investigators that go literally around the world finding and extracting missing people. Brian, how does the phone go missing but the shoes are left behind? I find the fact that her shoes are left behind. Who goes outdoors, unless you're a little kid and you're playing outside, and you disappear without your shoes? It's not like you're running to the mailbox or back, or you're, you know, dipping your toes into the pool behind the house or the lake. She left her shoes behind her. That doesn't bode well, Brian.
No, not at all. And it flies in the face of logic of what we knew she was up to earlier that night, that these were the only shoes she had, that these shoes were left behind at this acquaintance's house who gave her a ride. And now what we learn is that that cell phone moved approximately 30 miles from that last known location. You know, police were able to pinpoint that based on the phone hitting one of the towers in Blue Lick, Kentucky, to give them that 3-mile radius around the tower, which is, you know, a good 30-40 minute drive from where she was, where her shoes were found.
Okay, Brian Fitzgibbons, that's not good. Tonight, the search for Brooke Farthing. She's a little girl. She went to Grandpa's birthday party, then went to a grad party, a high school grad party. Now we find out she left her shoes behind and her phone is pinging up to 40 miles away near Blue Lick, Kentucky. What more do we know about the area where her phone pinged?
It's a vast open wooded area. I mean, you've got thousands of acres of wooded forest and there's not good cell phone coverage, and the area itself is just really steep, wooded, and heavily dense in some parts. And then on top of that, we have multiple bodies of water that are spread throughout. And the thing of it with this area, I mean, you can drive 20 foot down the road and there'll be a drop off over the hill. So if I placed or threw something there without, you know, without a hunter or someone walking up on it, or discovering, I mean, it's a difficult area to search. If you drop the house right in the center, I mean, there's just a vast wooded area, and people live out there, and there's little pockets of community spread out within the roadways, down the roadways. But as far as it being a long driving distance, that's just not the case. It's very close by and accessible to that residence.
That is from our friends at The Vanished Podcast. So, Brian Fitzgibbons, to make matters worse, now you have an idea about the terrain. What do you do?
Yeah, so that terrain, extensive searches have been done. But as that podcast highlighted, this terrain is virtually impassable in parts and made that matters very difficult when you're dealing with such a large swath of land. But there have been thousands and thousands of acres searched by foot, by drone, with dogs. You know, extensive searching has taken place in and around that area where the phone last pinged.
You don't doubt the ping location, do you? I mean, that's hard science. The phone was there.
No, I don't doubt it. And I think another interesting thing to point out is that the phone was connecting to that tower for 2 to 3 days after Brooklyn went missing. So it's very possible that phone was just left on, dumped out the window, you know, from a moving vehicle, and, you know, that the phone just, the battery died after 48 hours. But that phone was on for a little bit of time there.
Well, when you say a little bit of time, I find that significant, Brian Fitzgibbons. It was 2 to 3 days. The phone was still emitting pings.
Yeah, very significant. And it speaks to what may have happened in the final hours there before her disappearance. Was this done in some kind of capacity to mimic or feint movement that Brooke had left the area on her own volition, to leave the phone on, to drive it 30 miles away from the last known location? And I think that that's one of the things that investigators have been looking at.
Listen to what we have obtained regarding the night she goes missing.
I think it was very odd that Brooke was scared to death and then all of a sudden she was fine.
How do you just go to a party in Rockcastle County if you don't have a vehicle and nobody's coming to pick you up and nobody else knows you're there? It was very suspicious.
From our friends at Investigation Discovery, back to you, Alexis Tereshchuk. So she's at this grad party, and her friend girl, wants to leave and does leave, and now she's there without a friend. It reminds me so much of the case you and I investigated together, the Natalie Holloway case. When she goes out to Carlos and Charlie's on the high school senior trip, she leaves the friends. They get separated, and she's never seen alive again. It's very disturbing. Alexis, I want you to hear what the sister, Tasha, has to say.
Brooke sent many text messages to other friends of hers and her ex-boyfriend saying that she was scared, she was uncomfortable, she didn't really want to be there, hurry up and come get her, things to that nature. So her ex-boyfriend said, you know, I'll be there as soon as I get off. So about 5:45-ish, he gets a text message from Brooke saying that she's going to a party in Rockcastle County and that he didn't need to come get her. He answered that text by saying who with, and she never responded back.
That's from our friends at The Vanished Podcast. You're hearing Tasha Thomas. That is Brooke's sister. To Sydney Silvani joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter who's been working this case. Sydney, it reminds me so much of Gabby Petito. Remember after Brian Laundrie had killed her and left her body to be destroyed by animals out in dispersed camping? He came across the country back to his home in her Ford Transit that she had renovated using her credit cards. He had her phone, and he was sending texts as if he were Gabby to throw off her family, and I guess his family too, but the text didn't ring true. It would be, for instance, like me texting your new husband saying, how's Miss Sydney Silvani doing today? As opposed to, hey, how's Sid? He, Brian Laundrie, trying to pretend that he was Gabby Petito, still alive and well, wrote her family and referred to her grandpa as, for instance, Mr. Walter Malcolm Grace. And they went, why did she do that? Instead of saying, how's grandpa? So it was a dead giveaway. So here, Sydney, the point I'm trying to make is Brooke's sending all these messages going, I don't like it here. I got to get out of here. Somebody please come get me. I'm in the middle of nowhere. Then when the boyfriend gets off work, she suddenly says, I'm on my way. She says, forget it. I'm going to another party in Rockcastle County. He says, with who? She never texted back, Sid.
Right. It's definitely fishy. Something stinks here. Because if I'm someone's friend, if I'm someone's boyfriend in this situation, and I get multiple texts saying, I'm scared, I feel uncomfortable, can you please come get me as soon as you get off of work? It's going to take more than, never mind, I'm okay, I'm going to a different party, to convince me that you really are okay. So did someone else send this text? Was Brooke forced to send this text under duress? It takes more than, never mind, I'm good, to convince me that something isn't going on.
Dr. Sherry Schwartz is joining us out of the Florida jurisdiction. She's a forensic psychologist specializing in capital mitigation and victim advocacy at panthermitigation.com. She is the author of Where Law and Psychology Intersect and Criminal Behavior. She's a co-author of that. Dr. Sherry, thank you for being with us. Dr. Sherry, look at the text. What teen girl writes out, never mind, instead of NVMD. Nobody writes out, never mind. Even I don't write out, never mind. I'm going to a party in Rockcastle County. It sounds like Oliver the butler is writing over in merry old England. A teen doesn't write like that.
That's absolutely right. And as you pointed out, even those of us who are past being in our teenage years, we don't write like that either. Text messages are sent very much in shorthand. Also, what party is at 5 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning is what I read around the time that this text was sent. There are a lot of problems with this whole scenario. She gets separated from her friend. She goes to this location with this guy that is remote. She's very, very scared. And suddenly she's going to a party in the wee hours of the morning.
Well, here's another problem. At the location where Brooke was, a fire coincidentally breaks out?
The main thing that really got destroyed was that couch. We have, as her family, have always stressed, well, something must have been on that couch, something of importance that we needed probably to solve this case is on that couch that has been destroyed. I mean, there was really nothing left but the frame. All of Brooke's stuff is still here. So I'm like, what do you mean her stuff's still there? And if anybody can tell you about my sister, she's very protective of her stuff. She kind of won't leave it sitting around. She doesn't want you going through it. She's been that way since she was a little kid. Like, her stuff was her stuff.
That's Brooke's sister, Tasha, with our friends at The Vanished Podcast, Alexis Terezchuk, crime stories investigative reporter. So there's the sofa we're talking about. The sofa where she had been sitting, where she was last seen. And it, of all the things in the home, burns to the frame?
Not only did it burn to the frame of the sofa, it burned so hot it burned through the floor in the house. That was the absolute center of the fire. And in fact, this house, it looks very nice from the outside. This house was in foreclosure at the time. And when Brooke was taken there, there was no electricity and there was no running water. So she must have been so scared as soon as she walked into this very creepy home with this man.
That is very disturbing to Brian Fitzgibbons. The last place, oh, by the way, this is my friends at Lex 18. The last place where she is observed sitting that we know of gets burned to a crisp. Did you see that frame of the sofa?
Yeah, so she's separated from her friends at this party. She winds up getting a ride with this individual who owns the home. That's the last known place that we know that Brooke was. She's sending texts to multiple of her friends saying she's scared. Come get me. I need a ride. This place is creepy. Hurry up. Okay? And now we have the sofa burning. And I want to add one thing. Brooke's family called this individual the morning of her disappearance to find out where she was. And he said, hey, I don't know. I was out feeding the horses. The last I saw her, she was sitting on the couch smoking a cigarette.
If Brooke was there and he knew that when he left, that should have been the first thing he said is there's a fire at my house, but there's someone in there. And he did not do that. And when he came back and said there was a fire, why wasn't he urgently worried about where she was at that time? Because when he left, he says she was there.
You don't have an ending, so you don't know if she's still alive. You don't know if there's been foul play. You just know that she's missing and you have no idea she could be right next to you.
I want my child back. You know, no matter what, I just want her back. And that's all I'm worried about is getting her back.
That from our friends at WLEX. If you know or think you know anything about this missing teen girl, Brooke Farthing, please dial Kentucky State Police 859-623-2404. 859-623-2404. There is a $14,000 reward for information about Brooke. A gorgeous 28-year-old woman goes missing Plant City, Florida. Tonight, where is Kaya?
28-year-old Kaya Taylor, outgoing and full of life, builds her world around friends and family. But behind the smiles, her on-and-off relationship and search for stability hint at a life far more complicated.
Where is Kaya? Nobody just drops off the face of the earth. Nobody mysteriously disappears. Straight out to Brian Fitzgibbons joining us, Director of Operations, USPA Nationwide Security, leading an entire team of experts finding missing people, extracting them, former Marine Iraqi War vet. Nobody just vanishes. This is not Harry Potter. In the real world, no one just disappears. I hate it when people say they just disappeared. No, they didn't just disappear.
No, and in this case, Nancy, we have more information. Miss Taylor's vehicle was found just shortly down the road from where she was last seen alive. And that vehicle was left running. So this is not the behavior of somebody who's willingly disappearing. This is a huge outlier.
Outgoing with a large circle of friends, Kaya Taylor is very close to her mother. Her friends say she is very social and very talkative. At 28, Kaya puts her love of talking on full display as she takes a job near her home in Plant City, Florida, working in a call center and a telemarketing job. On February 6th, around 4 p.m., Kaya is seen dropping off her boyfriend, Jason Roberts, at his house on Cowart Road in Plant City. 3 hours later, and about a mile away, Kaya's car, a black Toyota Solara, is discovered sitting on railroad tracks. A concerned citizen calls Plant City Police about the abandoned vehicle. A responding officer and Hillsborough County Sheriff's deputy discover Kaya's car is still running, and her purse with her wallet, debit card, and ID are inside the vehicle, her phone found nearby. Treating the car as abandoned, the officer and deputy move Kaya's car off the tracks and leave it on the side of the road.
I almost want to ask, did my ears stop working? Brian Fitzgibbons, this is your specialty, finding missing people. It seems as if someone parked her vehicle, a Toyota Solara, on railroad tracks with the hope a train would run it over.
Parked on railroad tracks, left running, okay? And then the massive head scratcher here is that the Hillsborough County Sheriff then moved that vehicle off of the tracks, parked it, and left it there. At a minimum, you know, you would think that two or three things would happen right away. Running that tag, finding out who this person is, could there be in a severe state of mental health distress? Could there have been a medical emergency? You know, a huge missed opportunity here from an evidentiary standpoint, as well as immediately opening this case.
Is this correct, Dave Mack, Crime Stories investigative reporter, that they find her vehicle parked on the railroad tracks? Now, what we're showing you is a recreate. We wanted you to see the car. They find it on the railroad tracks, and inside they find her stuff, her wallet, debit card, ID in the vehicle, her phone nearby. I don't know what that means. Was it thrown out of the vehicle? And they simply move it off the tracks and leave it and file an abandoned car report. Really? Did that happen?
That is exactly what happened, Nancy. And you know, it wasn't just a Hillsborough County deputy. It was also a Plant City police officer. They were on the scene as well. So you've got two law enforcement guys who come up with the best plan to, when they find a vehicle sitting on the railroad tracks, a door open, engine running, a purse and other personal effects in the car. Their idea is to drive it off the tracks. So you've got another person getting behind the wheel and moving the car and parking it, locking it up and calling it in as a Nancy, it sat there for 3 days. 3 days from the time it was found on February 6th at 7 p.m. until the time it was actually somebody said, hey, isn't that Kaya's car? And it happened to be her on-again, off-again boyfriend's mother that spotted the car on February 9th and called him and said, hey, Kaya's car is over here. What's going on?
Jason Roberts' mother sees Kaya's black Toyota on the side of the road and tells him about it on February 9th. A friend Kaya was planning to meet on February 6th drives Kaya's car to her mother's home in Dade City. Seeing Kaya's purse and keys in the car, her mother, Kanitha, knows something is very wrong and files a missing person report with the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office. By the time Kaya is reported missing, her vehicle has been moved and touched multiple times, first by the police officer and deputy who decided to move the car off the railroad tracks, then by Kaya's friend who drives it to Kaya's mother, Kanitha. Beyond the physical evidence that is potentially lost, 3 days have gone by since the last time Kaya was seen.
Brivis Gibbons, 3 days? That's brutal. Explain why. We've lost 3 days trying to find her?
Yeah, so again, a huge missed opportunity. No chain of custody of this evidence. This evidence not being protected. And I want to add one thing. This vehicle was found just a short distance down the road from where Kaya dropped off her boyfriend at his friend's house. Okay, so for his mother to be the one to come forward to alert him to contact authorities raises a major red flag. These are the last two people to see Kaya alive. Her vehicle was found, you know, within, I've looked at the map, but I think it's within half a mile to a mile of the residence that she dropped him off at. And that's a major red flag to me as well.
Guys, another bizarre fact in the search for Kaya. Her shoes found neatly placed almost directly under a missing person poster for her.
Multiple searches are conducted by the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office on the ground with bloodhounds and in the sky with helicopters. Nothing is found. 3 weeks after Kaya vanishes, a pair of her shoes are found after a search of the area at the bottom of a telephone pole that has her missing poster stapled to it. The shoes are neatly placed side by side on the ground. Kaya's sister, Katrina Overstreet, says the area where the shoes were found had been searched extensively days earlier to no avail. Family believes Kaya's shoes were placed where they were found after her disappearance became public.
Dave Mack, that is bizarre. Clearly, someone placed the shoes there after that missing poster was put up. You know what it kind of reminds me of? Do you remember when Abby and Libby go missing in Delphi? And we have a photo where the perp, Richard Allen, is sitting at a restaurant, and right behind him is a missing person's poster. And they look identical. Nobody notices. Somebody put those shoes there. There's no other reason you would put the shoes there right under the missing person poster. And I wonder if the shoes were processed for fingerprints.
At this point, Nancy, you have to wonder what was done with the shoes because it was the family that found them. And again, it's really important to note that the family had been searching this area. Law enforcement searched the area and these shoes were not there. The shoes only showed up and they pointed out that they were placed right there on the drain at the bottom of a telephone pole with the missing poster. The shoes were not there when the missing poster was stapled to the pole. The shoes showed up after. I think it was the suspect terrorizing the family and friends.
You know, Brian Fitzgibbons, that is cold. Kind of reminds me of Rex Heuerman, where he would call his victim's family and taunt them about murdering the victim just to torture them. Why would somebody do that? That's, you know what? As a prosecutor, I learned the hard way. Don't try to figure out what's going on inside the perp's mind. Just prove the case. So these shoes being placed there, what can I learn from them about Kaya and her whereabouts?
Yeah, was this a particularly sinister move by the perpetrator who's responsible for Kaya's disappearance? Or I'll offer this. All too often in cases, particularly with missing young women, there's someone involved in the periphery who's afraid of the perpetrator. This might be another woman that had access to those shoes and placed them there in a hope to tip off law enforcement to who perpetrated this crime, that they themselves are afraid of coming forward for fear of death or physical harm to themselves but they do want to try to help in some way. So I think those are the two possible avenues there.
She just lit up a room when she walked in it. She was spiritual and was always given really good advice. It comes in waves, you know. Sometimes I move along with my life and then you feel guilty because you are trying to move forward without her, but trying to keep her memory alive. My hope is just to find closure and answers.
It's been overwhelming. We really didn't think we would be here at this mark. There's no trace, there's no evidence, there's nothing. So it's like we're sitting from the very day that we found her car till now, there's nothing. It's kind of like a twilight zone. Somewhere, someone knows something. So maybe if they're seeing that the family's just not going away quietly in the night, you know, we really are going to continue to look for until we find closure.
She lights the whole room up when she walks in. She has a smile that's bright as the sun. She's bubbly. You know, she's kind of bouncy in her walk. If you know anything, tell the sheriff's department, please. And if it's Kaya, just come home. No matter where you are, what's happened, just come home.
From our friends WFTS and Fox 13, Kaya's mother still looking for Kaya, not giving up and leaving the door open to just the thought that she could still be alive. Let's hear what the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office has to say.
We know she left that residence around 4 o'clock. Then her car was found on the railroad tracks around 7. So we're really asking for people who were in that area between that time frame, if they saw the car, if they saw her, if they saw really anyone mulling about in the area, to give us a call, because you never know what tip could be the one that really helps us find her.
From WTVT. So in a case like this, Brian Fitzgibbons, USPA Nationwide Security, where do you start? Because LE, law enforcement, let the case go cold. 3 days. 3 days. That's crushing. But where do you start now?
Yeah. So, you know, hey, obviously we're going back a number of years now, but there is one point to bring up. Two subjects who were closely associated to this case, who were the last two to see Kaya alive, have had legal troubles of their own, right? So I would want to pull every record of their communications from while they were incarcerated. What did they talk about? What did they write about? Who were their cellmates? Who were floor mates with them? What conversations were had? That could be one simple, straightforward task that law enforcement conducts on a regular basis to see if that generates any leads.
She was dropping the boyfriend off. The boyfriend and his friend was the last person that seen her, as far as we know. Her keys, her phone, her license, her debit card, everything was in her vehicle. And if anybody knows Kaya, Kaya never leaves her cell phone. The friend found the vehicle, reached out to my mother-in-law. Hey, you know, anything weird with Kaya? Have you talked to her, whatnot? Her car was just abandoned on the side of the road. We're just hoping and praying that she is still alive and that she's out there and she's safe. She's not in pain. She's not hurt. No one's holding her against her own will.
From our friends WFLA, totally uncharacteristic for Kaya to just disappear. Was dropping the boyfriend off. That's Portia Taylor. That is Kaya's sister-in-law. Dropping boyfriend off, boyfriend and his friend, last people to see her, car keys, phone, license, debit card, all in the car. So back to you, Brian Fitzgibbons, USPA Nationwide Security. What do you make of that? I agree with you. Start with them.
Yeah, it's the simplest and most reasonable place to start. The last people to see Kaya alive. I'd like to know, you know, and we have to look at the timeline here. 4 p.m., she drops a boyfriend off at his friend's residence. By 3 p.m., that vehicle is still found running. How much gas was left in the vehicle? How long had it been there, right? Is there security footage, which we probably can't access at this point? But I want to start with them and their circle. Who are the people that they've been around? Who have they talked to about this case? That should be the focus right now, is anyone who was at that residence on that day around that time.
Then to throw a monkey wrench into the search for Kaya, another young woman goes missing, same area.
Another missing woman 3 weeks earlier and 7 miles away in Dover, Florida, is also still unsolved. Veronica Reyes Diaz, 23, mother of three, went missing on January 18, 2020. She went out with friends on a Friday night, came home, tucked her children into bed, walked outside, and vanished.
Did one perp take both women? I mean, this is not downtown Manhattan. It's not L.A. or Atlanta, not Cleveland or Philly, Brian Fitzgibbons. So it's quite the coincidence that two young women, kind of same age range, they both go missing within days, same area?
Yeah, so, you know, each case has to be handled individually, of course, but with this information, it would be very basic and very simple to do an open source search, to make some initial interviews, to find out if there's any connection between these two young women. And if there is, that is certainly an indicator that there could be a common perpetrator here.
Tonight, we have a mom suffering and begging for answers.
She was fun-loving. Her smile was contagious. It feels like you separate yourself from reality, what's going on. Everything goes in like slow motion and fast forwarding at the same time. It's a nightmare. We'll retell the story of what happened and just keep people and keep her name out there so it stays in people's minds. It's the worst for a parent and grandparents to go through, to not know.
The mom begging for answers and harboring hope that her daughter Kaya will be found alive. That's from our friends at Bay News 9, who I thank for covering Kaya's case. If you know or think you know anything about Kaya's disappearance, there is a $15,000 reward. $10,000 put up by the family, $5,000 put up by Crime Stoppers, $15,000 reward in the search for Kaya. Look at her. Say her name, Kaya Taylor, 28 at time of disappearance. Her family begging you for answers. Again, the tip line, 813-247-8200, $15,000 reward. Tonight, we remember an American hero, Trooper Sergio Romero, Texas Department of Public Safety, just 27, killed in the line of duty, leaving behind his wife, Francisca, and two little boys. American hero Sergeant Trooper Sergio Romero. Thank you to our guest joining us tonight, but especially to you for being with us in our search for missing people across our country. Nancy Grace signing off for tonight, but I'll see you tomorrow night, God willing. And until then, good night, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.